Welcome to The Beach is Just the Beginning, the official podcast of the Antigua and Barbuda Tourism Authority. Join travel author Peter Moore as he discovers the people and places that make Antigua and Barbuda the must-visit destination of the Caribbean. The beach is really just the beginning.
Hi, I'm Peter Moore. Welcome to our episode on cricket in Antigua. Watching cricket in Antigua is something that every cricket fan should do at least once in their lives. That sound you hear is the Iron Band, coming to you live from the Under-19s World Cup Final held at the Sir Vivian Richards Stadium in Antigua. They're just a bunch of guys sitting on the grass tapping out a beat, the heartbeat of the match, on bits of scrap metal fashioned into rudimentary instruments. What you can't see are the dancers, resplendent in their feathery carnival outfits, moving to the beat, or the sensei, a colourful demon hell-bent on bringing the party vibes to the ground. There's Mocko Jumbie, stilt walkers, dancing energetically and precariously on their long, thin stilts, and down on the boundary, Hilson Joseph, Antigua's famous flagman, stands upright in his uniform, bringing a certain gravity to the proceedings. Hawker's barbecue lobster on a grill, the bar in the party zone is doing a brisk trade, and a DJ stands by to unleash a blast of feel-good soca whenever a wicket falls or a boundary is scored. This is watching cricket, but not as you know it. You're not at Lord's anymore, Dorothy. In this episode, Sarah Malin from International Cricket Tours joins us to tell what to expect if you go on one of their tours to Antigua. Chris Millard from England's Barmy Army tells us what he thinks makes watching cricket in Antigua so special. Sir Richie Richardson reveals why he wished he was in the stands when he was out in the middle. And Sir Andy Roberts and Shaunisha Hector reveal what it was like to be the first male and female cricketers, respectively, to play for the West Indies. But first, we chat with Chicky Baptiste, the DJ who first brought the party vibe to watching cricket at the old rec ground way back in 1981. He's the reason why watching cricket in Antigua is so much fun. Chicky Baptiste is a cricketing legend in Antigua. He may never have picked up a bat for the West Indies. He may never have sent down a delivery. But along with his good friend Gravy, he set the party tone of watching cricket in the West Indies. If you ever watched a test match beamed live from the rec ground in Antigua, you would have seen him playing music from a precarious platform hanging off the old double-decker stand with dancers gyrating and Gravy G'ing up the crowd. Killer tunes, dancing, lots of rum and infectious energy. It's a formula that has since been copied around the world, but never beaten. Chicky joins me today to talk about those old rec days. Hey Chicky, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Now, tell me about those old rec days. How did it all get started?
The first love was cricket. Being at cricket and then having all your friends around you, and we like to drink, we like to party. And we said, you know, there's one thing that's missing. I was a DJ back in school, so I decided I'm going to walk with a boombox. Back in the day, people used to walk with their transistor radio to listen to the commentary. So it wasn't out of the way for the security people to see a radio coming in, you know, a boombox. I had a cassette music, and during the breaks, we play a little music and do a little thing. And then in 1981, the first one day international, in the first big game Antigua's getting, we decided, I said, Chicky, you have to work with something heavier. And I decided, look, let me see what you can do. Back in those days, you know, you couldn't just go to and play music at the grounds. No, no, it couldn't happen. So what we did, I bought a mixer. One of my friends bought one speaker. Another one bought one, and until everybody bought a piece, until we hooked up the system in the recreation grounds. And the first song we played, the authorities came down with the police. Turn it off, turn it off, not here, no, no, no. And then the spectators who were in our stand, they said, no, we want Chicky to play. And we turned it off for a while, and then we start again, and we had problems. Until they realized that how we did it and how much fun it could be, they said, okay, let's work with it a bit and see.
So what was it like when that old double-decker stand was jumping?
It started to move with you. And the crowd, you know, 5,000 people in that stand. And it goes like this. The people who built the stand told us it had to move. It was built like that to take the sway. People used to call us downstairs and say, look, watch the stand moving.
The stand was dancing as well.
Definitely.
So how did you pick your tunes? What were the cheeky standards?
We had tunes pertaining to cricket. A lot of our artists in the West Indies, in the Caribbean, they make cricket songs. And we played those. If something happened, you have a song feature for that particular moment. So you always have to be thinking. You always have to have the songs in them ready. For instance, when Vivi is going into bat, they have about three songs that has been made from Vivi is the name, cricket is the game. So when he's going into bat, we play that. Richie Richardson. And we play that for Richie Richardson. We play for Curtly Ambrose and Andy Footy Roberts, you know. So we have songs for all occasion. The present West Indies anthem was made right in Antigua. David Rudder, rally around the West Indies. So when West Indies is doing not too good, or they're doing real good, we play, you know. For any team, especially England, when they're not doing well, we play, Captain, the ship is sinking. Captain, the season. That was a big one with David Gower.
I was just going to say, I know that you first played that to taunt David Gower.
Yes. One time I played it for the West Indies, it was going down. And Viv Richards came into the stand and told me in no uncertain tones, Chicky, this ship is not sinking today, so don't play that song again.
Now, as you mentioned at the start, the partying never got in the way of the cricket, though, did it? You've always loved the game. Where did that love for cricket come from?
My father, he had loved cricket. I used to play test matches at home. Me and my brother, one is West Indies and one is England. And we used to bat 11 times, 10 o'clock in the morning in our backyard, and we play. My mother bring out the water cart. She brings the water for us. And we play all day. All our friends love cricket, you know. Viv Richards was our hero, so that make it even better. But still, we have never forgot that we were secondary to the cricket. Cricket is why we are there. And if we didn't do it right, they would have taken that privilege away from us.
So it's to enhance the game rather than detract from it.
We were a bit raw, really, yes, at first. They used to say, Chicky, turn off the music. We want to make an announcement. But by the time I get that message, another over had started. And so what they did, they put in a switch with a light right in front of me. They wanted to make an announcement. They put on the switch and they turned it down.
What was your favorite cricket memory from the old Rec Ground?
You know, to tell you the truth, there's so many memories, right? But one of the biggest ones is it wasn't much cricket, but it was the fun. When it rained out, I think it was 1997 against India. It rained for probably 3 days. We had helicopter on the field, drying it out. And I used to play every morning from 8 o'clock in the morning to midnight. And people kept paying to come. People came and party. And in the end, Brian Lara made 100 in the game. And it took me on the field too, just like a player, a real player would have done, and gave me the man of the match check. Yeah.
Now, you went to school with Sir Viv, is that right?
Yes, he was in the bigger class.
Now, I hear you nearly missed his famous innings against England in 1986 when he scored a century in just 56 balls.
Somebody gave you the information.
No, I just did my research.
I don't remember exactly why I didn't walk with the system that day.
Well, my research says that you were at a family wedding.
Could be.
Could be, okay. Could be. That's the legend.
They called me and said, Chicky, Viv on fire. You have to come. I said, no, I can't come. And then one guy came and picked me up with the system. He broke all rules of traffic because Viv was getting on bad. And we're listening on the radio and we're driving fast. Turn here. And by the time we reach into the grounds and the last plug was plugged in, Viv made the 100. So the music came on just in time. And it was great.
Fantastic. I was actually chatting to Sir Richie Richardson the other day, and he actually made a point of telling me about you getting man of the match. But the other interesting thing he told me was that when he was out in the middle, he would be looking across at you guys and going, wow, that looks so much fun. I can't wait until I retire and I'm able to go and sit with those guys and experience cricket like that. It's something when a cricket legend's out on the field looking across. in the middle of the game and saying, I want to be there.
The cricketers, they love it too. They love it, especially when their team doing well and they're batting well and they hear that kind of vibe. Oh, sometimes, like after the game, you'll have Chris Gayle and Brian Lara. They just come up and do a thing on the microphone and, you know. But we had fun with a lot of the cricketers.
What's it like out at the new stadium? What can English fans expect with the upcoming test? You know, like you said, the Barmy Army, they come over. They add a bit of colour and atmosphere as well.
Oh, sure. They are fun. I have pictures with them in the stand. They're right at the back of me and they send down a person and they have up this big sign, Chicky, more beer. and they just drink.
And finally, what's your advice for visitors to Antigua? What should they see and do in the country to experience the country the Chicky Baptiste style? What's your favourite bar?
My favourite bar is on Wireless Road. That has the right name. It's called The Pitch. He named it after cricket pitch. There's where a lot of the older guys go and hang out and talk cricket and fire too.
If you want to talk cricket with some old timers, have a bit of fire. The Pitch.
On Wireless Road.
On Wireless Road is the way to go.
Yeah.
Chicky recommended.
Definitely.
So are you still DJing?
I'm presently at King's Casino every weekend, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays.
Down in the centre of St. John's there, down near the dock, yeah.
Right there.
Well, there you go. I don't know why you didn't say to all the English fans who are coming out here, I'm going to say this, all the English fans coming out here on the Friday, the Saturday and the Sunday after stumps, head down to King's Casino.
Oh, sure.
And Chicky will be there just burning up the dance floor.
Burning it up.
Here's something I think you ought to know. Watching a cricket match in the Caribbean can change your life. You think I'm exaggerating, don't you? Well, my next guest, Sarah Malin, got dragged along to watch cricket in Barbados by her sister and ended up going back to England, chucking a job in and starting a career in sports travel. Now, she's the director and founder of International Cricket Tours, an award-winning travel company that takes fans to the biggest cricketing occasions around the world and in some pretty spectacular destinations as well. Sarah joins me today, in the midst of another Caribbean cricket tour, funnily enough, to tell me how it all came to this. Hi, Sarah, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Better than all of you guys, because I'm here in the Caribbean, enjoying sunshine and all that goes with it.
What was it about that first experience in the West Indies that had such an impact on you and, as it turns out, your life?
Well, I could talk about that for hours. I had the opportunity to actually meet some of the West Indies team when I was there on that first trip, because the team that I travelled with was a mixture of English people and West Indians who played in West London. It turned out that they went to school with all the famous cricketers in the West Indies team, so they used to come and hang out. That's kind of probably what piqued my interest. And of course, in the old days when the cricket grounds were surrounded by palm trees and the locals climbed the trees, they brought cowbells, conch shells, the entertainers were there. It was spectacular entertainment, not just for the cricket. The whole ground experience was really something to behold. The old wreck, of course, in Antigua was amazing. That double deck ascent with Chicky and the other characters there, singing calypsos, playing music, the double-decker stand, literally jumping up and down from the weight of the people having a party. There was just so much atmosphere. It makes my skin go actually thinking back to those days. It really evoked passion. So having had one experience, I went home. One of my girlfriends was a mad cricket fan. I said to her, there's a test match next year, Sharon. Shall we go? And she said, yes, just book it, Sarah.
Tell us a bit more about International Cricket Tours. What do you think makes you guys different?
It's the love of cricket that all my staff have. We really do love what we do. People can see how much we care, the special events we put on, the surprises we give people by introducing them to secret famous faces that we've held back in the car park until just the right moment for them to come in. And everybody turns around and goes, wow. Can't believe it. They are so starstruck when we give them the opportunity to meet. We've got the most amazing do planned in Antigua the night before the test. We are going to the Coolidge Cricket Ground in the afternoon to have a client cricket match. This is the first one we've done in Antigua. And what a location. Many of you remember this as the Sticky Wicket, but it's now called the Coolidge Cricket Ground. So we've got that for the afternoon. Then that's followed by an evening of entertainment by Spirited Band, which belongs to Richie Richardson.
So curtly.
Yeah. So that's in place with food and drink. And sadly, we'd like to party into the night, but because it's the night before the match, we won't be able to. We'll have to go home reasonably early because everybody's going to have to get up the next morning and head off to the Sir Vivian Richards Stadium. So I think it's my love of wow factor that drives the company forward. And I love to see the reaction that we get when we take people to new places, give them new opportunities, and they get to meet the sporting heroes, of which there are many in the Caribbean. So hopefully we'll be seeing Sir Andy as well. Kenny Benjamin, great friend. He helps with our schools and clubs program as well as turning out for us. We've done catamaran trips with the surprise guests that we've already mentioned on them. Antigua, what better place to start than the first test in Antigua? It is going to be amazing.
I just want to talk to you specifically about watching cricket in Antigua. What's it like for people who have never been to a cricket match in the Caribbean or wherever? What's it like in Antigua, for example?
Well, Antigua holds a special place in my heart at the cricket ground. I think it's tremendous. And for those travelling for the first time, I think they would be stunned by the amount of activity that's going on in between play, of course. It is an unusual ground in that it really only has two stands facing each other. One is dedicated to their party stand, which, of course, is great fun, and you can buy a ticket for the day in there. But the other side is full of local vendors and a great big grassy bank. And even though we have clients who pay top dollar for the very best seats, I don't even see them. They're down on that bank because that's where the carnival atmosphere is. You've got people grilling fresh lobsters for a fiver. Well, where do you ever get that? They're pouring rum without a measure. There are old ladies with old-fashioned pails between their knees making local fresh ice cream. There's all the different local foods there. The vendors are always absolutely charming. And I think the pouring of the rum probably means that they take a bit more money that day than they probably normally would have done. So the food and drink that's available there is second to none. There's plenty of room to walk around the ground. The nets are visible to anybody who wants to see the teams practicing before they play or before they go in for the next innings. I think that's a really nice touch. And of course, we've got the Sir Vivian Richards statue, which is a great place to meet. And of course, many, many photos are taken there. And generally speaking, you can see the celebrities, the older cricketers from whichever country, the commentators. You often see them walking into the ground, into the hospitality box area, coming out at lunchtime, doing a bit of PR with the fans, and they love it. So Antigua is a great place to go.
It seems to me one of the things that makes international cricket tours unique is your close relationship with Antigua's famous cricketing knights, you know, the Sirs of Antiguan cricket, you know, Sir Richie Richardson, Sir Andy Roberts, Sir Curtly Ambrose, and of course the legend Sir Vivian Richards. How did that come about?
I got to know them, not very well, but I did get to know them in the early days. And I've somehow managed to retain that relationship. And in recent years, I work with them every tour. They seem to like working for me.
I've got to say, though, I think it is particularly unique to the West Indies and in Antigua in particular, that these guys who are absolute legends, like Sir Curtly Ambrose, like Sir Vivian Richards, they're so open and giving of their time when it comes to fans of cricket.
They definitely are. And in fact, I think really I have to say thank you to Sir Richie, because he was the one that I knew best. And he actually introduced me to the others. I mean, when you've seen Sir Vivian come along to an evening with Spirited Band, surprise everybody and stand up and sing, well, that just brings the house down, because who would have expected that?
Wow, that sounds great, doesn't it? Sir Viv Richards doing a bit of karaoke. That's a once-in-a-lifetime moment right there. If you want to find out more about Sarah and the tours, drop by their website at internationalcrickettours.co.uk. Does what it says on the tin, as they say. Now, speaking of Antigua's legendary cricketing knights, I couldn't do an episode about cricket on the island without speaking to one of them. And who better to speak to than Sir Andy Roberts, the man Sonny Gavaskar rates as the best bowler he ever faced, and the first Antiguan to play for the West Indies. Sir Andy is a busy man, so I had to interview him in his car on his way to an appointment, so please forgive the poor quality of this call. But trust me, it's worth it. Sir Andy Roberts is regarded as the father of modern West Indian fast bowling. Known as the Hitman, he was the leader of a quartet of fast bowlers known as the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. He took his 100th wicket in his 19th test, faster than any bowler to date, and he finished his career with 202 test wickets at an average of 25.6. He's one of Antigua's famous cricketing knights, and he joins me today for a chat. Hello, Sir Andy. How are you?
Good day, Peter. I am fine.
Now, you grew up in Earlings in the south of Antigua, and I've read that cricket wasn't necessarily on your radar. I think you thought you were going to be a fisherman.
From the age of 8 or 9, I've been going fishing with my father. I spend most of my time either in the seawater or in the hills, you know, tending to animals. Without even realizing it, the foundation for my fitness started at an early age of being very active in conditions which people today don't really appreciate.
Now, you were the first Antiguan to play for the West Indies. When you got the call, did you realise what that meant? What was the reaction like in Antigua?
So I wasn't surprised, really, because we were playing in Guyana, and the captain at that time was Rohan Kanhai. Combined Islands was playing against Guyana. And he said to me that they would probably want me to stay up in Barbados because Keith Boyce was injured and they had to find a replacement for him. So what really took me by surprise is that I went through Barbados, the plane landed in Barbados, Rohan Kanhai and all the other West Indians who were playing in the test match in Barbados came off the flight and no one said anything to me. So I came straight to Antigua. And less than 4 hours after, the president of the Antigua Cricket Association, which was Sir Lester Bird, came to Earlings and found me and said that I have to go back to Barbados the very next morning. That was the only surprise I had because, you know, having passed through Barbados, if they knew they really wanted me, they could have asked me to stay off there, which they didn't.
And what was the reaction in Antigua to finally having someone playing for the West Indies side?
Let me put it this way. I wouldn't know because I left Antigua by 6 a.m. the morning. So the news wasn't really up and about. So I believe I arrived in Barbados before the general public in Antigua knew because the people who I was playing a game of dominoes with knew because I told them, look, I'm going back to Barbados. I made the team. And they were all surprised.
Ian Botham says you're the best fast bowler he has faced. Sunil Gavaskar says the same. What do you think made you so intimidating, so good? It can't have just been the beard.
I think, first of all, my looks, the beard and the non-smiling, you know, really got to some batsmen. But I think it's the way that I vary my pace. After about a year or two in county cricket, where I believe I could have bowled as fast as any man who has bowled before, I realized then that pace alone is not a deterrent because once you get accustomed to the steady pace, it's easy to play. If you keep batsmen guessing as to what pace you're coming at, I think that creates more problems than just a steady 150, 160K. But they were never comfortable because they never knew what pace was coming.
Now, I know you were a very focused cricketer. You had the nickname of the Hitman, but I think I read somewhere that you said you weren't trying to hit people, they just kept getting in the way.
What I find is that bouncer is a wicket-taking delivery just as an outswinger or inswinger or yorker. It's just that my bouncers were a lot more difficult than others because it comes straight at the batsman. And the idea was to get them to fend off because I seldom bowl without a man at short leg or a man at leg gully. I got a lot of wickets caught at forward short leg and caught at leg gully because the ball comes straight at you.
Now, of course, you were famously part of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse along with Joel Garner, Colin Croft and Michael Holding. You were all fast, but each of you brought something different to the table. I saw Michael Holding say that you were the most intelligent bowler of them.
I study batsmen. Because from an early age, I love cricket. I watch cricket. Whenever I'm playing, I would be watching. I'm watching batsmen from long leg. I would be watching batsmen from mid-off. I try to get a hold of how the batsman moves, whether his first movement is forward or backward. So by the time batsman comes in, I would already, you know, assess how they're going to play.
You also mentored a lot of the young bowlers that were coming through in that side. Was that a deliberate thing or something just happened?
Something just happened. I was the oldest statesman of the lot. And one of the good things about us four is that we talk to each other a lot. When we see they're doing something that is not what they're accustomed to doing, I would go up and tell them, listen, you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong. We trust in each other. You don't want anything better than when you have four men competing, because remember, you know, we're all competing. You assist each other, because if Michael gets five or six wickets and we bowl the team out cheaply, it's not Michael bowling the team out, it's we bowl the team out. You know, we work as a unit. Even up to today, when Michael was commentating, I would watch cricket and I would call him and say, listen, Mr. T, I observed this. You have all the technology in front of you. Work it out. The good thing about today's players is that they have all the technology in front of them. I was fortunate that midway through myself and Michael's career, we started to share room. What we used to do is at night, we used to, you know, analyze what happened during the day. And then we worked it out. And the next day we can pass on our comments to the team.
So you were like the video replay, but in the room, just in your mind.
Just in the mind, yeah. Even up to today, I would look at somebody and see how they play and remember it so I can pass on the information to somebody else.
Do you have any all-time favourite dismissals?
One, I can say yes, this was one of my most favourite dismissals, was in England in 1976, Tony Greig. It was the very first test match after what he said. That's why it was so special.
I did want to talk to you about that famous tour of England in 1976, because for a lot of people of Caribbean descent living in England, it was a real watershed moment for them. They felt that you guys helped them to walk tall and face down the racism they were experiencing. Were you aware that your team was having that kind of political and cultural impact?
Not really, because I played cricket in England, county cricket, for 2 years and never encountered racism, never did. But the remarks that were passed when the same 1976 tour made me realize that playing for a county is different to playing for West Indies. Yeah, but I never realized, but what I know, and I don't need anybody to tell me that, because I have a lot of family in England, a lot of friends in England, who tells me that, listen, the only thing that they have to shout is whenever West Indies beat England in a test match in England, because they can go back to the factories, a lot of them work for London Transport, British Rails, they can go back, you know, and have something to shout about.
Now, you're rightly famous as a bowler, but it has been suggested that one of your greatest feats was your last wicket partnership of 60-plus runs with Derek Murray against Pakistan in the 1975 World Cup. Is that one of your proudest moments?
Well, it was a proud moment, but I can say that my proudest moment was when we beat Australia in Australia in 1979-80. We won the series 2-0, and that was one of my proudest moments here. West Indies have always been to Australia and played very good cricket, but always end up on the losing side. So when we went there and we beat them for the first time, that meant something special to me. Winning the World Cup in 75 was also special, but I reserve that victory in Australia as my proudest moment.
So I've just got some quick-fire questions. Now, first of all, who is the best batsman you ever bowled to?
It depends, you know. A lot depends on the surface and the conditions. Barry Richards was a good. Sunil Gavaskar was special. My Australian player would have been Ian Chappell. I know a lot of people will say Greg Chappell, but I find that Greg, although he may have scored more runs than Ian, but Ian gives you more of a challenge than Greg did. And I like challenges.
Hey, who was the batsman you always seemed to be able to get out? Your bunny, as we call him.
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. No, I never had any bunny. Never had any. I just bowl. Sometimes I know I didn't take the wicket, but I know I got a wicket because of the pressure I put the batsman under. That's what the four of us did, you know. We set up batsmen for the other.
So who was the best opposition bowler you saw in action?
Dennis Leary. Dennis Lilly, I think, was probably the greatest fast bowler. He was fast in the beginning, and then you can mix it up. And when you mix it up, you become a better bowler. Pace don't last forever, you know.
Finally, with the England fans making their way to Antigua for the first test on March 8, what would you suggest they do while they're here to really experience the best of Antigua?
I would suggest that they come in early, take a visit to Barbuda. You would never get another experience than you will in Barbuda. You could walk for 10 miles on white and pink sand in Barbuda. As the ad said, the beach is only the beginning. Enjoy the beaches, enjoy the people. We have some fairly interesting characters here in Antigua. Just try and get to meet some of them.
I told you it was worth listening to. I'm old enough to remember Sir Andy and his pomp, and he was something to behold. I love that he's still thinking about how to get batsmen out and passing that intel on to the next generation. When I was in Antigua recently, I got to speak to one of Antigua's other cricketing knights, Sir Richie Richardson. He was the next generation after Sir Andy, a fantastic batsman and captain of the West Indies from 1991 to 1995. I was chatting to him about golf, actually, for a future episode. Him and Sir Viv are big golfers these days. But the conversation turned to cricket, naturally enough, and in particular, about playing cricket in Antigua. This is what he had to say.
When you're there, you're feeling something special in your heart. People are having so much fun, and they're having that much fun because of you. And they're excited because what you're doing out there. You created that atmosphere. So you feel very much part of it. And you think that it would affect how well you concentrate. But it actually gives you a bit of boost, makes you want to perform more because, like, you're on a stage, people are having fun. And that's what it's all about. People having fun enjoying what you do, you know, and the timing of the music is perfect, well controlled, so it does not really interfere with the game itself. The music always comes in when there's a little break. As soon as play, bowler's running in, batsman's ready, quiet, and it's cricket. You just feel like it's theatrical. It's just a wonderful feeling. You felt it inside of your heart. This is on my island, my hometown. And these people are creating an atmosphere. The atmosphere at the ARG could not be replicated anywhere else around the world. I've played in front of 110,000 people in Calcutta, 90,000 at the MCG, and I've never, ever experienced the atmosphere that I've experienced playing at the Antigua Recreation Ground. It's just unique, it's special, and it made me feel proud, especially when I'm out there playing and to see the fun that the people are having. You know, it was just bliss for me.
And you're a local boy as well.
Very, very proud, very proud. You know, I still recall some of these moments. And you know, it's amazing. You know, there was a time when the test match was completely washed out. They had a lot of rain and the pitch got wet and they had to cancel. But every day, the double-decker stand was filled. And they actually awarded the DJ, Chicky, man of the match. That's unheard of. A DJ was awarded a man of the match for a test match, only in Antigua and Barbuda. But for me as a player then, I could not wait to retire so I could be in the stand having the kind of fun that they were.
That's cool, huh? You know it's pretty special when a legend like Sir Richie says he was looking forward to retiring so he could have the same fun the crowd was having. Now, another bunch of cricket fans who know how to enjoy themselves at a cricket match is England's Barmy Army. They'll be in full voice in Antigua for the first test between England and West Indies on March 8, so I thought I'd have a bit of a chat with Chris Millard, Managing Director of the Barmy Army, to see what he's looking forward to the most. Hi Chris, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, yes.
Now, the Barmy Army has come a long way since those bleak days in Australia back in 1994-95.
It has indeed, yeah. We started out in 94-95, as you rightly say, in Adelaide on that famous Ashes tour. A lot of English fans over there singing and shouting for the England team, and people couldn't understand why, because the England team was so bad and they were getting sunburnt every day. And now we consist of 8 staff. We've got a travel company that works with us. We have a membership organisation that serves 35,000 members. We have over 1 million social media followers. So it's really grown into a little bit of a beast, really, over the years.
It truly is an army.
In every sense.
What makes watching a match with the Barmy Army so special, do you think?
It's all about enjoying in a fun, safe way, having a laugh in the crowd, having a laugh with the other fans in the ground or whoever they're supporting, and really just making sure that everyone enjoys it. And being active fans, not passive fans, getting up there, having a sing-song, enjoying the culture that you immerse yourself in when you go to some of these fabulous places. is all part of the Barmy Army experience.
I was going to say, the Barmy Army are going to be making their way to Antigua in early March for the first test. What's it like watching a cricket match in Antigua?
Antigua is an exceptionally special place, different to the other Caribbean islands, and it's such a beautiful cricket ground, especially. It's really, really special. It's one of my favourite grounds in the world for the simple fact that I think it's the only sports ground I've ever been to in the world that you can get lobster cooked on a barbecue at lunch. So I'll be walking around, and I know a lot of the other English fans think the same way as me. And when you can get lobster and you're watching Joe Root on 150-odd, it's not a bad day out.
But what's it like post-stumps, you know, at the end of a day's play? What do you guys get up to?
It depends on where we are, really, and what's happening that evening. So we'll usually have a charity party where we support the Ruth Strauss Foundation. Or this year, we might also be supporting a local charity, just depending on what's arranged by the team. And we always try and make sure that everyone has a full experience of the island that they're on. So whether it's doing excursions, whether it's seeing a bit of the nightlife or seeing a bit of the local culture, we'll always try and maximise that for everyone. And there's so many lovely places in Antigua, some uncovered, some that are quite well known to people. I think that's one of the most special experiences about the island. There's so much to do and there's so much that it offers. Am I right in thinking there's more beaches than days of the year?
Well, that's what they say. There's a beach for every day of the year.
There you go.
And they're pretty good beaches as well. So you're getting quality and quantity.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that.
Now, Antigua's a pretty small place. Do you run into the teams at all while you're over there?
Yeah, we do. We've got an extremely unique relationship with the England cricket team. I think they really appreciate what we do for them and have done for them over the years. And they're always the first to say, but we'll come down to your HQ tonight. We'll have a drink and a party if things have gone well for them, usually. And they're really, really welcoming and coming to see us and coming to speak to us. So we have an amazingly unique relationship with the players. And that, I think they appreciate how we support them through thick and thin. And they try and pay that back when they can. And who knows, COVID allowing, let's hope that they might be able to join us in Antigua.
And I guess, too, in places like Antigua, if a match finishes early, it's no great hardship. It's just another day at the beach, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. If the test finishes in 3 days because England have won, then it's no problem. People will be out snorkeling or out on the beach.
I like your optimism there. Obviously, a visit by the Barmy Army in a lot of these places is a real boon for the local economies, isn't it?
It really does impact incredibly well on the tourism industry. And it also, we really appreciate how much it means to the little independent bars and restaurants that we know how much that they really enjoy us visiting them for a series.
You also try to give something back by raising money for charities, including local charities. What kind of local charities do you guys usually support?
It completely depends, really. What we normally do with regards to local charities is it's suitable to the time and place that we're in. So, for example, when there was a tsunami in Sri Lanka, we visited the place about 3 months after the tsunami, and we raised an awful lot of money to rebuild people's homes and houses due to the tsunami that happened there. We try and make it topical for the issues that are going on in that island or in that place at that time. It's something that we hold very dearly, and it's something that we really are really passionate about, making sure that we give back to the communities that we're going to.
And do you get a chance to witness sort of grassroots level cricket while you're in places like Antigua?
We would always stop if there's a game going on and there's not much happening. One thing we do is we make sure that we try and organise a game. So if anyone listening to this in Antigua wants to play with the Barmy Army, please get in touch with us. At barmyarmy.com, and we'll organise a game.
You never know, Sir Kirtley might come along and take part.
I might be a bit too far.
Sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Who wouldn't want to watch cricket tucking into a barbecue lobster lunch? I want to finish this episode with a look to the future of cricket in Antigua. 2019 saw the very exciting news of Shaunisha Hector, a local right-arm pace bowler, becoming the first Antiguan to be picked for the West Indies women's cricket team. Like everywhere else in the world, the women's game is really growing in the West Indies, and Shaunisha's selection was a real boost for the sport in Antigua. I caught up with Shaunisha and spoke to her about her new role as an international cricketer and all-round inspiration for girls across the island. I'm here today talking to Shaunisha Hector, right-arm pace bowler and the first female Antiguan cricketer to play for the West Indies. First of all, can I just say how much I love that photo you posted on Facebook of you with Sir Richie and Sir Kirtley and Sir Viv. It's such a great photo. And that suit that you're wearing is just amazing. What's the story behind that suit?
Well, as a female in a picture with all legends, then I have the standout.
Well, you did. And, you know, Sir Viv's a pretty snappy dresser and you made him look very, very ordinary in that photo. So congratulations on that. And, of course, the reason that you're in that photo is that you're a bit of a legend yourself. You know, you're the first female Antiguan cricketer to play for the West Indies. Tell me, how did that feel when that happened?
Well, it's a great feeling, I must say. I was a bit shy playing my first game at home. My mom came to watch my first game, So I was a bit nervous.
I imagine the whole family was there and distant relatives, everyone was there. It must have been such a moment of pride for Antigua as well.
Yes, it was. Also, it was Independence Day for Antigua.
Oh, wow. So it's just the perfect setting. When did you first start playing cricket?
I started to play cricket around the age of 8. I was introduced to hardball cricket by Keith Frederick. He was the coach for the New Inchops male team. So he wanted us to come and just pelt some balls to the male team. Then he eventually started teach us the fundamentals of the game.
And who was your inspiration?
Well, my inspiration is Winston Benjamin, also one of my coaches.
And what was it about Winston that inspired you?
Well, he's a pace bowler that is very hard to determine what type of ball he's bowling.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to be.
When did you get serious about cricket?
Well, I got serious about cricket at the age of 14 when I was playing for school league and also the male team in the village.
So you were mixing it with the guys then?
Yes, I was. There were never no women's team to play for.
I was just going to say, what kind of encouragement and support did you get as a young female cricketer starting out?
I wanted to stop, to be honest, but then there were some guys in the village. For instance, there was O'Randall Boston. Every time I thought about to stop and play football, he went to my brothers and so forth, and I just couldn't leave. And basically, he already told me what the dream was, to be the first Antiguan to play for West Indies.
So they saw right from an early age that you had that potential to be that person.
Yes, they did.
Where has your career taken you, both on tours and in your life?
I've been mostly in the Caribbean playing. The crowd is very backing you. It gives you the motivation to go forward and go out there and be your best.
What's it like playing cricket in Antigua?
Cricket in Antigua is very supportive. There's a crowd backing you along the way. And I guess being the first Antiguan female, there's a lot of people behind of me.
And how is women's cricket developing here? Do you go around schools, for example, and try and encourage girls to take up the sport or do a few little coaching sessions or things like that?
Well, I do some coaching, I must say. I just started year before last going around to schools. Also, I go to some of the school games because there's quite a few females playing with the boys. So I teach them the fundamental of how to put on the gears.
So you'll be teaching them how to kit up properly before they go out.
Yes.
Where can people go and watch women's cricket in Antigua? Are there any kind of women's cricket matches?
This year, it has been a different change. There have been some cricket matches in Pickett's with some young females around the age under 15 come up.
What do you enjoy most about playing cricket?
Playing cricket, I get to be me. The more I could be me, is the better I could be. And that's just the fun, because I get to be myself.
Finally, what words of advice do you have for young girls just starting out in the sport?
I should say, if you see yourself doing it, you should keep going forward. Don't only dream it, but put in the hard work and just back yourself.
Wise words from Shaunisha there. Well, sadly, that's the end of the episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing about cricket in Antigua. Having just watched the Under-19s World Cup final there, I've got to tell you, it's something else. If you do make it over to watch some cricket, I've got one bit of advice for you. Hang around a bit after stumps. The party is not over. I think I saw more people coming in after the day's play than I did during it. it seems the DJ hangs around and the Sir Vivian Richards Stadium turns into the island's most happening dance venue. A big thank you, of course, to all my guests. The legendary Chicky, make sure you get down to King's Casino and catch one of his sets. Sarah Malin from International Cricket Tours and Chris Miller from the Barmy Army. Both their tours sound like a lot of fun. And of course, the Cricketing Knights, Sir Andy Roberts and Sir Richie Richardson. All the best to Shaunisha Hector as well. She looks like a real prospect. In our next episode, we're going to Barbuda. The island is famous for its extraordinary beaches and incredible frigate bird sanctuary, but we're going to dig a little bit deeper, tuck into a conch burger, and really get under the skin of this enigmatic island. See you then.
The Beach Is Just the Beginning is produced and presented by Peter Moore for the Antigua and Barbuda Tourism Authority. For more information and inspiration about visiting Antigua and Barbuda, drop by visitantiguabarbuda.com.